All right, Rabotai. Fridays, we have a different schedule than normally. On Fridays, we learn the V'im a little. Amen. And then we try to say something on the Parashah. We're in the prophets, we're in the book of Judges. And we're moving at a snail's pace. We're only in Perek Gimel. The basic theme in this book, the book of Judges, is we read the story of how the Jewish people fell into bad behavior, bad practices after the death of Yeshua. Most of the time they fell into Avodah Zarah and things like that, and God got angry at them and therefore activated an enemy to come against us, to arouse us, to make Teshuvah. And then all of a sudden a leader arises, the Shofet he's called, and he brings the people back to Teshuvah and he pushes back the enemy, and then there's tranquility for a couple of years, and then the same thing happens again. It's a vicious cycle. The Jewish people, they're called a stiff-necked nation. Am Kishe'od, it means they're stubborn. It takes them a long time to learn the lesson. And this will repeat itself throughout the whole book. It's cyclical, the book. Jewish people are behaving, everything is good. They fall from their level. The enemy arouses against us. God sends the Shofet to save us. We make the Shuvah, and there's tranquility again. Last week we learned about the major axis of evil, the three nations, the three most severe nations that can come attack Bnei Yisrael, which we learned were none other than Ammon and Moab, and of course Amalek. Those are the top three. And that was last week. The Shofet that we talked about last week was a fellow by the name of Ehud ben Gera. And he went, and after the Jews made Teshuvah, he was able to kill the king of Moab. The king of Moab died. The Pasuk says in Lamed, I'm just going to the end of the story here, Vatikana Moab b'yom ahu tahat yad Yisrael, Vatishkot ha'aretz shemonim shana. Look at that, 80 years of tranquility. Seems like a long time. 80 years, there was no story. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, however, tells us that something happened after. Ve'acharav haya Shamgar ben Anat. The next Shofet was a fellow called Shamgar ben Anat. Vayach et Pilishtim 600 ish. Well, he pushed back the Pilishtim, 600 men they were. Bimlamad habakar. He had a very unique weapon. Now, this is not a conventional weapon. Rashi says, Hudarban. In order to keep the oxen plowing in a straight line, so they put on the sides of the ox a stick. The stick has coming out of it a sharp, pointed piece of metal. So if the ox turns, it's going to prick him. So he won't turn anymore. So that darban keeps the ox plowing straight. For whatever reason, Shamgar ben Anat, he was able to push back the Pilishtim using this. I mean, this is amazing. What was it? Military cuts? They didn't have money for weapons? What in the world? Anyway, but he beat them with it. So it worked. So that's the Baruch Abba, doctor. No great-grandchildren this week, doctor, to report? Oh, okay. Just want to make sure. Baruch Abba. So this is the pasuk that we came to study today. We're going to break a record today. We're only going to learn one pasuk. And we're probably not going to do it justice. That's how deep this pasuk is. First of all, this guy Shamgar ben Anat, who is he? What is he? Who is Pelishtim? Because the Pelishtim came to attack. There were 600 of them. And why is he using Lamad HaBakar? Very, very, very strange story. So just in order to know a few introductions, so you understand how these episodes work. First of all, you have to know about the Pelishtim. You have to know what this enemy is all about. In order to understand the nature of the enemy Pelishtim, you hear all about them. The Pelishtim have been around since page one of the Bible. We've been hearing about these guys. Where did they come from? In Jaya. Now, it's not the Palestinians that we call today. No, that's not Pelishtim. No, those are Jordanians or whatever they are, Arabs, whatever they are. Pelishtim, actually, we find them the first time in the Torah, in the book of Bereshit, if I'm not mistaken, in Perek Yud. Over there it's giving us the lineages of the different families. So one of the families over here, it says, Ubnei Ham. You have the children of Ham. Ham is the son of Noah, Shem Ham. So Ham's children are Cush, Mitzrayim, Put, and Kna'an. It's tiring to listen to Ali, huh? Yeah. No, but so sleep in the class, I guess. You come to class for you, you get to sleep in the class. That's the warning you're on. I know we got it. I felt it. I almost got sucked in. Like a tsunami. So it says over here, Kush u'Mitzrayim u'Fut u'Kna'an. Okay, interesting. So Mitzrayim is the son of Ham. We talk about the Egyptians. Well, this is the story of Egypt we're talking about now in the Parasha. So that's why we say, for example, in the Tefillah, Be'admat b'nei Ham, in the land of b'nei Ham. That's why Egypt is called the Admat b'nei Ham. Because that's what it is. It's the land of the children of Ham. It's another way of saying Eretz Mitzrayim. And then the Pasuk comes along and tells us Mitzrayim's children. Mitzrayim wasn't originally a country. Mitzrayim was a person. They named the country after that, you know, family. The country was named after the family. But Mitzrayim was a person. So Mitzrayim had children. U'Mitzrayim yalad et Ludim, et Anamim, et Lehavim, Vetnaftuhim, and he must have been a poet. All these names rhyme over here. Okay. Ve'et patrusim, ve'et kasluhim, asher yetzu misham pilishim. Ah, there you go. We found them. We found the pilishim. Pilishim is actually the children of the Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim's son is pilishim. Okay, we're getting warmer now. We're getting warmer. We're warming up the pot. Now, if you look at how many children Mitzrayim had, well, he had Ludim, Anamim, Lehavim, Naftuhim, Patrusim, the Kasluhim was number 6, Hashem Yatzfu Mishar Pelishtim. So Pelishtim came out of number 6, and Kaftorim, which is number 7. So the 6th child of Mitzrayim produces this nation called Pelishtim. Alright, we have in the art scroll doctor on page 47 to have the family tree. If you want to reference it, it'll tell you all of it. But I think we put it clear. So now the Mikubalim are measuring something very strong over here. We know that in Kabbalah the number 6 is very significant. 6 might be the most important number that the Kabbalah talks about. Because the Kabbalah says that there's actually 7 different energies or midot. One is called Chesed. Chesed, you know what Chesed is. Chesed is the first Midah. Chesed is Abraham. Abraham is number 1 of the Tzadikim. You remember when you invite the tzaddikim to your sukkah and sukkot, we call them the ushvizim, the guests. So you invite 7 guests. Every night you highlight one of them. And the reason why you're inviting these guests, because each guest represents an energy. And after Kippur, after we're clean from the averot and all that, so we feel comfortable to invite the tzaddikim to our you know, table in the sukkah. And when they come, the tzaddik brings a gift. I mean, you go to somebody's house for Friday night dinner, you got to bring them a gift. You can't come in empty-handed. You know, yourself is not a gift. The dedicated is to bring something. So what do you think, the tzaddikim are going to come for nothing? Avraham's going to come to your house, you're inviting him, you put him a chair, you sing for him, Ulu Ushbizin, Kaddishin, and all that. So what they do is, they bring you their strength. So that night, on the first night of Sukkot, for example, somebody wants to attract themselves towards Chesed, or they want their children to, you know, start becoming a little more selfless. The first night of Sukkot, and Avraham, that's his gift. He says, tonight, if you make a prayer, in my merit, I will, you know, attract you to my midah. I'll share my midah with you. That's a big thing. That's a great, it's an eternal gift he's giving. It's not a bottle of scotch. He's giving you something that you could use, you know, for a long time. The night of Yitzhak, he brings you his midah, whatever his midah is. The next night is Yaakov, the third night. He brings you his. He's emet Yaakov, honestly. So that's his what he brings to the table. And you go through each one. The next two nights, night number 4 and number 5, is Moshe and Aharon. And they have what they represent in the holy books as well. On the 6th night, however, is the night where Yosef comes. And always Yosef is connected to the number 6. And number 6 has great significance because Avraham is Chesed, he's the right arm, and Yitzhak is the left arm. If you're comparing them on the body, Chesed Gevura, Tiferet is the torso, that's Yaakov. Moshe and Aharon are the two legs. They're the ones that support the nation. And then you have the Yesod, which is the Brit Milah, which is representative in Yosef. Therefore, Yosef is called in Kabbalah Yesod. Yesod means foundation. Because the foundation of all of mankind begins where? From the Brit Milah. You know, everybody starts from a Brit Milah somewhere. The Zera comes out of the Brit Milah and fertilizes somewhere and becomes a person. So therefore, Yesod is number 6, and it's represented in Yosef. Why has he become the representative of Yesod? What did he do to get that, you know, that title? Which is an incredible title. I mean, you're talking about over here, foundation. Why is he the foundation of the Sefirot? It's because, I don't want to say more than anyone else, but he was tested, a super duper test, when it came to foundation. Exactly. And he overcame it. And that was when he was tested and seduced day in and day out with the wife of Potiphar. I want to explain to you the magnitude of that test for a minute. You have to know that Egypt in the Torah is called Ervat Mitzrayim. It's called Erva. The symbol of Egypt is nakedness, is immorality. I mean, it's a very, very filthy place. It's a contaminated place of immoral behavior. Ma'aseh Eretz Mitzrayim, the Torah talks about. The Ma'aseh Eretz Mitzrayim is known to be, you know, debauchery. Ma'aseh Mitzrayim is degeneracy. It's the lowliness of the time. That's where all the, you know, all the averot of immorality were taking place at the time. Shmutz, exactly. And what happens? Baruch haba Chawaja. You're a man of your word. You said you're going to come back and you came back. Ashrecha, Yerbukim Otka B'Yisrael. And you brought a custom with you? Okay, you got a commission. So you see over here, an amazing thing. Yosef, who's very handsome, Yosef is Yosef, he's 17 years old, young, strength. He's in a country all alone, so it's not like he has a support system. Not like he has his father there, he doesn't have a minyan, he doesn't even have a zimun. Even Chabad wasn't in Egypt in those days. So therefore, You have over here a tremendous test that Eshet Potiphar is seducing him day in and day out. And of course he overcomes it with great, you know, he was this close of, you know, the Gemara says, of falling, but he overcame it. And the Gemara says that as a result of him overcoming that test, where he did not fail his yesod did not let anybody down, except Eshet Potiphar. But the point is, he created such an energy of Kiddushah that the Jewish people would be in Egypt for 210 years, there would be no intermarriage in Egypt. It's impossible to think that. We're living in America for 250 years, the intermarriage rate is 90%. 9 out of 10 marriages are assimilation, and that's, you wonder how come there's no museum on the silent Holocaust. You know, how come in Washington they didn't make a museum of the 6 million Jews that we've lost in the post-Holocaust era to assimilation? They don't talk about that. That's a bigger loss because, you know, we lost their souls as well. So it's only logical that if you're living in a country for 250 years, there's going to be assimilation. In Egypt, for 210 years, there was no assimilation. The Torah says there was one case of a flirtatious woman that she got into trouble, and Torah points her out. Shelomit bat devri. But besides that flirtatious girl, everybody else was okay. So the Zohar HaKadosh says, because when Yosef, and the Gemara too, when Yosef went down to Egypt, that self-control that he had, since Yosef represents the Yesod, he built the foundation of Klal Yisrael, and that foundation was already established. So in Egypt, we had somebody to build a strong foundation for. That would already protect all the future Jews for the next 210 years. Let me explain to you better, Rabotai. That means that Nisayon of Yosef was not a personal test. That Nisayon of Yosef had national repercussion. We always say to us, well, you had one man in a room that overcame his Yetzirah, you know, good luck to him. You know, we give him a medal of honor, and, you know, didn't do too much to anybody else. It's his personal success. That's not the case in Yosef. Since Yosef represents Midah number 6 of the general construction of Klal Yisrael, which is Yesod, if his Yesod would have been compromised, the Yesod of Klal Yisrael, he would have had the Leaning Tower of Pisa then. If the Yesod of Yosef becomes compromised, but that's what he's representing. So he's got to make sure, just like Avraham has to make sure that his chesed is perfect, because that's what he's presenting Klal Yisrael. And Yitzhak, his Midah, and Yaakov, his Midah, every one of those tzaddikim was given a certain midah that they had to present, the perfect diamond. Yosef got the hardest one.
If he
fails, it's a disaster. Disaster for everyone. If he fails, there's no Yitzhak Mitzrayim. You know why there's no Yitzhak Mitzrayim? Because for Yitzhak Mitzrayim, you need one ingredient. You need Jews. Now, if everybody's assimilated, there's no Jews. You know, small detail. So Yosef's, that story, we don't talk about it enough. That story of Yosef overcoming Eshet Potiphar is critical. It's critical because that's the Yesod of Klal Yisrael. Now, since he represents not himself, Yosef, Yosef represents the Klal. So the Zohar HaKadosh says like this: on that day, that test that Yosef had was not a test of one man. At that moment, he had the test of 600,000 men. Now you can control yourself, but if I times and multiply the desire by 600,000, even if you times it by a point, already it's difficult. Which means we struggle with the one-to-one ratio. That means Yosef was now involved in a desire to conquer the Yesod of Klal Yisrael. So it was a tremendous. That's what when we say that. Okay, well, there's other people that also overcame their pleasures. And you're right, but it was nothing compared to Yosef, who's representing the whole building. The whole building is on him. Now, where does this happen? This happens in Mitzrayim, and Mitzrayim over here, we know is called Ervat Ha'aretz. Now, Ervat Ha'aretz. There's, you know, the nakedness of the land. So it couldn't happen in a worse conditions for Yosef to overcome. I mean, it's the perfect storm for Yosef to fail this test. If Eshet Potiphar, day in and day out, 17 years old, hands, they pile on everything that can go wrong for Yosef. They put him in the worst position. But he overcame it, therefore he established Yesod. Now out of Mitzrayim's children, because he had 7 children, What is the one that is most corrupt when it comes to Yesod? Well, the sixth child. And the sixth child of Mitzrayim is Pilishtim. So therefore, when you want to talk about the balance, when you have the side of Kiddushah and you have the side of Tum'ah, so on the side of Kiddushah you have Yosef HaSadiq, number 6, Yesod, Brit Milah, Kodesh. To us, the Yesod is something that we take very seriously. We don't let a child go past 8 days without making an operation on the Yesod already. We've got to make sure that part of the body is operated immediately on. We don't want the guys, the Yesod, to be compromised. But when you want to look at the negative energy, because there's always a balance, always has to be the good side and the dark side. So if I were to tell you, who represents the dark side of the bad Yesod? Pilishtim. Because Pilishtim come from Mitzrayim, which is Elvat Ta'aris, and they're the sixth out of the womb. And that's what you'll always see. Pilishtim, they're always involved in that Avon. I don't want to bring you too many proofs, but if you remember, when Abimelech, Melech Pilishtim, and the guy was a pervert, Yitzhak and Rivka were in the hotel room, and he's looking into the window. Yeah, peeping Abimelech. He's looking into the window over there, and not before he abducted Rivka. I mean, the guy's wild. And then, of course, Kirdor, I don't know, he gives some sort of lame excuse. That's Pilishtim. You know, right away they see pretty girl, boom. You remember the story of Shimshon? I don't think we learned it this round yet. We'll learn it. It's in the book of Shoftim. The book of Shimshon, he fought against the Pilishtim. That was one of his big battles. And when they caught Shimshon, what we're going to learn in the Navi, it says, they caught him and they had him, tied up in shackles. And they all brought their daughters to have relations with Shimshon in order to get from his Zera. So they're crazy, perverted people. The Pilishtim never want to kill the Jewish people. The Pilishtim want to just, assimilate us and, bring us to become part of... that's Pilishtim. Every nation has their idol. I mean, you have other nations that they just want to kill us. They're not interested in anything. They want to take away that uniqueness, I'll call it, of Klal Yisrael. They want to make it one nation. They will assimilate the Jewish people. So anytime you see Pilishtim, they're MO. They're number 6 on the list. They're coming after the Yesod of Klal Yisrael. Fine. There's another nation that we should already discuss. They also have nefarious intentions against Klal Yisrael, and that's of course Amalek. Torah refers to Amalek as Reshit Goyim Amalek. Amalek is enemy number 1. Reshit Goyim Amalek. That's the ace of spades. Reshit Goyim. What does it mean, Reshit Goyim? It means that they're also concerned, Amalek, that Klal Yisrael doesn't emerge as a unique nation. That's why the second we came out of Egypt, we're having a birth of a new nation. There's a chance that Klal Yisrael might emerge now as a startup nation. Who's on our back? Boom, Amalek. He wants to make sure that Klal Yisrael does not become, special. The only difference between Amalek and Pilishtim is Amalek comes at the beginning, Pilishtim comes already even after we're a nation established, and they just want to assimilate us. Amalek can always find, he tries to catch us in the beginning. If you remember, for example, what was one of the things that Amalek did? They went after the Yesod. It says, Asher Karecha Baderech. Karecha is a different example. Everybody over there is over 18? So some of the things that they did, it says, Amalek, is they defiled the Jewish people with homosexuality. Karecha comes from the word keri. Keri means semen. Homosexuality, mishkav zachur. And they did something very, very strange. very peculiar. I guess not for Amalek it is. They cut the Brit Milahs of the Jewish people, and they threw them up. That's where Amalek was. You know, some of you guys are sitting there, where's he getting this stuff from? You know something, in order that we don't have any claims later on, you guys are funny. In the class, you don't say it. When you leave, then you talk behind my back. If you have anything to say, say it now in front of me. Where am I getting this from over here? No, when I leave, the guy makes up stuff. But I'm already anticipating it. So, therefore, I'm going to tell you over here. Yeah, it is paranoia. It is paranoia. But it's paranoia for good reason, because I'm doing this for 50 years already. So I have a good sense.
You were 1 year old?
Yeah. Before my mother's womb, I was doing this.
That's how come you remember?
In my mother's womb, I was doing this. So he says over here, Dashi. Asher karecha. Lashon keri v'tum'a. Shehayam v'tame'an b'mishkav zachur. Dashi. They came in with a bunch of homosexuals over there, and they started to defile the people. And then he comes along and says, "Vayzanev becha." Vayzanev, that she says, "Chotech milot," cut the brit milah off, "v'zorek klape ma'ala." Crazy people. Because that's Amalek's item again. Like Palestine, they have something in common. They go after the Yesod of Klal Yisrael. Because these two nations know that if you can go... Listen, you want to go after a building, you go after the foundation of the building. Finish. You don't got to go... I don't have to knock 1,000 floors or 100 floors. I just blow up the foundation and the whole building will come down by itself. You don't got to waste time. So, exactly. So they... Well, that was a different plan. That was a... You're bringing a proof to me, actually. The original plan was not jet lines. The original plan, they put to the sub-basement, they put bombs, car bombs, to blow the Yisrael. But it failed. Right, exactly. So they were going after the Yisrael, but they weren't able to blow it, so they had to go up to the top over there. Fine. So I'm telling you, two nations, they knew our strength. The strength of Klal Yisrael is what? The Yisrael. Amalek knew it. So if he's able to get the Jewish people to commit acts of homosexuality, there goes the whole Yisod of Klal Yisrael. And Palestine, the same thing. They're the Yisod of the Kilipa. They represent the sixth of Edvat Ha'aretz, of Mitzrayim. So now, once we see back to the story of the Navi, once we see that Pilishtim came, so we know exactly, as we learned last week, whenever you see the enemy that comes, you know the sin. God will send the enemy representative to the sin. So you have to always know. First, you have to know your enemy. If you know who your enemy is, then you know your problem. Why did God send Pilishtim and not, somebody else? Must be Klal Yisrael. In this episode over here, they were making sins that have to do with the Yisod. And therefore, it aroused the kilipa of Pilishtim and brought them to an issue here. Now, I'd like to digress for a minute, if I may. We're starting a new book. Strangely enough, the name of the book is called Sefer Shemot. Now, I wouldn't have called it I wouldn't have called it that. That's an arbitrary word to call the book. The book of names. And guess what? We don't even really call it that, because if you look in the, it's Exodus. Exodus is not names. Exactly. So, I mean, really we should call it what the Ramban called the book, if you want to be consistent. Sefer HaGeula. Which say the Sefer HaGeula. I'm not against that name. It's the book of Exodus. That's a great name for the book, because it's one of the main themes of the book. Again, I'm still waiting for the reason why we call it Deuteronomy. That I haven't figured out yet. But if you can give me that one, I'd be appreciative. I got the other ones. Genesis, I figured out. Deuteronomy is a rough one. Just figure it out for me. You have those, rabbis who want to show how secular they are. The book of Deuteronomy. I'm going to show how smart they are. Anyway, the book of Exodus, why would we call it the book of names? What's this book got to do with names? Oh, because in the first couple of pesukim of the book, Ve'ele Shemot B'nei Yisrael Haba'im Mitzrayma, and it gives you 12 names. Reuven, Shimon, for that, you name a book after the opening line, which has nothing to do with the book. It's very arbitrary, that opening verse. You name a book after the main events of the book. You want to name the book. By the way, I wouldn't have a problem if you would have named the book like the Bahag named it. The Bahag named the book, book number two. I have no problem with that. You're following a system, book number one, book number two. At least it has a system. But to call it the book of Shemot, which is so arbitrary, because that's not the theme of the book. I mean, a person comes along and says, you know, Rabbi, I'm looking for a good name to name my baby. Oh, open up Sefer Shemot. You'll probably find some good names in there. There's no more names in the book of Shemot than there is in Bereshit. Why is that the book of names? Unless it is the main theme of the book. That's the key. Unless it is the main theme of the book. It's only a question because we don't know exactly what a name is. If you understood what a name was, see, you think that a name is just identification purposes. You know, so I don't mix up the Reuven from Shimon, so we can't call everybody the Reuven. You know, like what happened in our community, where everybody has the same, all the first cousins have the same name. So then we have to go to the middle initial. You know, Eli J, Eli A, and then we got to go through down the, through the list. I remember my grandfather, Alav Shalom, you know, from time to time, he would tell me on a Friday, hey, come, we got to go visit Joey Safdie. I said, why? He says, I'm getting all those American Express bills over there. My grandpa, Joe Eli Safdie. So you have to go to him. Here's your bills. That's it. He did it on purpose. That's my grandfather. He picked my grandfather up paper. But my grandfather was too sharp for that. He knew all those tricks. Anyway, in our community, it happens a lot. You know, the mail gets mixed up because everybody has the same names. So you got to go, who's your father? Oh, you're that one. You're the other one. So, it's not for identification purposes, Shemot. I want to refer you to a Gemara in Berachot, page 7. The Gemara there says, on the Pasuk in Tehillim, Lechu hazot mif'alot Elohim. It's a mitzvah to go look at the mif'alot Elohim, at the doings of God. If you ever have a chance, David HaMelech says, Lechu, go out and hazu mif'alot Elohim. Look at the actions, the doings of Hashem. Well, it says mif'alot Elohim. Elohim sounds like the actions of a strict God. Asher sam shamot ba'aris. That he has made shamot in the aris. Mazeh shamot. Shamot, that she says, is melashon shemama. Shemama means desolation. And if you look throughout history, you see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has made a lot of shemamot. Lechu hazu mefa'alot Elohim asher sam shemot ba'aretz. I mean, in every single generation there's been shemot. Catastrophes, or you would call them disasters. Shemama means desolation. It comes from the Hebrew word also, lehishtomim. Lehishtomim means to wonder. Because when a person sees a massive tragedy, he's mishtomem, he's, wow. You know, God forbid if somebody sees an earthquake, and he goes to visit the aftermath of an earthquake, and he sees the rubble on the street, and he sees the people strewn all over the place, and he sees all the casualties, he's, wow. So, lechu hazu mefalot tum asher sham shamot ba'aris, shamot is shemama, is the shemaon, the surprise, the shock that it gives you. Comes to Gemara and says, well, don't read that word shamot, ela shemot. So now when you read the pasuk, you have to read it, lechu azu mifalot Elohim, asher sam shemot ba'aris. Shemot ba'aris. As if to say that the shamut and the shemot, there's some sort of connection between them. Because the Gemara is not taking the pasuk out of its natural context. The pasuk is the pasuk. It says Sham Shamot, but cannot tell me, don't read it this way, read it that way. If you would read it in Charisyon Shemot, the firing squad in the first row would have you dead in three bullets. And you say, oh, it's a Gemara, Berachot Dav Zayin. Jump in the lake. We read the book here. Shamot Ba'are. Don't give me the Rashot over here. But the Gemara is telling you, Shamot, Shemot. So the deep explanation is as follows. You have to know that what is in a name? What is in a name? The name is very, very significant of a person. The name is actually the essence of a person's soul. That's why if you take the word neshama, the middle letters of neshama, of course, is shem. A name of a person is not arbitrary whatsoever. The Kabbalists say that the name a person receives at the time of birth, the father or whoever names the baby at that moment gets a spurt of Ruach HaKodesh. There's no Ruach HaKodesh today. However, everybody gets a spurt of Ruach HaKodesh. When the rabbi looks and says, V'yikaresh emo b'Yisrael, and the father says, David. That's a lightning bolt went off in heaven, and they communicated that name because God knows that this neshama's name is supposed to be David, and it's communicated to the father's mouth. There was a rabbi called Hidushe Harim. Hidushe Harim, a fellow came to him, a father of a child, and said, Dear Rabbi, I want you to choose the name for my child. You pick the name, you're a big rabbi, you know better than me. So the Hidushe Harim said, I will not. So the guy said, why not? He said, I will not deprive you of the opportunity to have Ruach HaKodesh. He said, why shouldn't you have Ruach HaKodesh once in your life? You know, let God come and speak through your, if I do it, then I get Ruach HaKodesh anyway. So you should experience it. And it's an amazing thing. The name that comes out is already destined from Shishit to Mimasib Edishin. And what is the name? The name represents a person's mission in life. It's all in his name. Sometimes it's clear from the name, but the name of a person is made up of letters. The letters have different configurations, as we know. And you can open up the letters as well, in miluis. So based on many, many calculations, the letters that make up your name ultimately become the essence of what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are, and what your potential purpose is. It's all there. Look at the letters of your name as elements. You know, on the periodic chart of elements, the H2O. So you have two H's and you have an O and you have water. You're just combining two of these and one of those. The letters of your name are elements. I take an Aleph, a Lamed, a Yud, a He, and a Vav. And this is your elements. Now, in these elements over here, I can put the hair first, I can put the Vav first, I can switch it around, I can open up the Aleph to make Aleph, Lamed, Peh. But God says, these are the letters that you're working with, and that's all the ingredients that will tell you your potential, your strengths, your purpose, your tikkun, and everything. It belongs to you, and it belongs to nobody else. And your configuration is not going to be the configuration of another Eliyahu with the same name. Although it's the same letters.
Does the last name come
into play? Not really. Although your last name is Beracha. So it comes into play. I'm not willing to say the Shem. I don't know about your first name, but your last name is coming. Eliyahu. That's why I said not all Eliyahu are the same. That's a perfect example. You're a better man than me, Elliot. You're a better man than me. Anyway, so you see over here, incredible in Yad. So you don't miss a zel with names.
My third son at the Brit Milah was the last second the name was changed. It was from
I don't know, Ginger,
the last second.
Yeah, I mean, listen, my brother-in-law, he printed Kippot, you know, welcome to the bris of baby Moshe. We're wearing the Kippot at the bris. Okay, the Yekadesh Shemo B'Yisrael, Yaakov. Look at the, I told you, a discount? What's over here? Moshe. He's, I don't know, Yaakov, it didn't come out of my mind that Yaakov, it couldn't come out of my mind. I know it. I know we decided, Moshe, my sister in the lady section, what is he doing? What is he doing? This guy's crazy. Wrong name. Wrong. Do over. Mulligan, do over. No do overs. That's it. Yeah, the rabbi said Yaakov, it's Yaakov. And that's what he is. It wasn't supposed to be Moshe. The guy in the calligraphy was not going to decide the name. The embroidery guy doesn't decide the name. It's Yaakov doesn't decide the name. He was supposed to be a Yaakov. He needed Yud Ayin Kuf and Bet. It's very, very significant that Botai. Cham Baruch Alav Shalom will always call us by our Hebrew names. There's no significance in Eli. It means nothing. That's for identification. That's good for a passport. But you want to talk to a guy, you're talking to Eliyahu, you're talking to Abraham, you're talking to Yitzhak, you're talking to Yaakov. Now you're hitting the guy's guts. There's an old trick, if you ever want to wake somebody up from a dead sleep. So you take cold water and you pour it on his head. No, I'm joking. That's one way it works. But if you don't want to wet the mattress, the way you wake up from a dead sleep is you call him by his name, by his Hebrew name. You go to him and say, Yaakov ben Sabut. That's how I wake up Jacob in the morning. Yaakov ben Sabut. You're tickling his neshama. You're waking up his soul. Or you're summoning the soul to come back. I saw it in the hospitals when, people were in and out of consciousness and you see the big rabbis would come to them and they would call them by their Hebrew name. Reuven ben Sarah. Reuven ben Sarah. And you see a reaction. They're not just telling them, hey, get up. Hey, do you hear me? How many fingers? I don't know. They call him by the name and the mother's name. Of course, it's calling them the souls. It's summoning the neshama. So there's a lot to say in the Jewish name. We don't mezalzel, and it's actually the purpose of a person. And everybody has a purpose. And we don't always know the purpose. See, that's the problem with, I'll say this, that we have a problem today. We don't have people who knew stuff like they knew in previous years. Previous years, when stuff happened, people knew. People were able to tell you, yeah, bingo, bingo, and give you an explanation. And they were able to base it on a lot of different, Ruach HaKodesh that they had. As an example, you're reading now the story of Mitzrayim. I mean, if you're an amateur, you read the story of Mitzrayim, and you say, it's so unfair. These are the Jewish people, the children of Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. And they go down to this place, and Paro uses them as bloodbaths for his leprosy, and he uses them as human bricks, and he takes the baby boys and he throws them in the water, and he's killing children of childbirth. I mean, what did we do to for 210 years? What did we do to how many millions of people were killed in this Mitzrayim at the time? And it was Avodat Parech, it was backbreaking labor, psychological torture, building buildings on quicksand, so the slave doesn't even get benefit of seeing what he built. After he finally builds it, it falls down. So it's a psychological torture. Every method of torture they had, they did in Egypt. And you're sitting from behind the scenes, and you're saying, God forbid, this attitude happened after the Holocaust. After the Holocaust, everybody becomes an expert. They're going to give their opinion on it. And, people wrote books. But Menon, atheists, was God sleeping? Where was God? Crazy stuff. And they started to give their... Now, how far we are from understanding the ways of God? The only way I can explain to you how far we are would be, imagine if a... how much... You have NASA that's sending up a space shuttle, a rocket, with all its, details. And on the launching pad in Cape Canaveral, there's a yellow jack. How much does that yellow jack understand of what's going on there right now at Cape Canaveral? Now imagine, he's there, and he saw it, he was there. So he saw it. I mean, you can't say he didn't see it, he was there, he saw it. The yellow jack writes a book on space shuttles. Anybody take him seriously? What gives him a right? I was there. I saw it. You're a yellow jack. You're a fly. By the way, I'm going to make a bold statement. The yellow jack knows more of the space shuttle than anybody knows of the ways of God. We're less than the yellow jack in trying to explain. So be very wary when somebody starts to say, this is because it is. Well, in those days, they had those guys like that all over the place. But today, Yellow Jacks, trying to explain life and trying to explain things like that. We don't have that Ruach HaKodesh level to explain it. But for example, the Arizal, he was one of those, he knew everything. So he came along and said, haha, Egypt, that's an easy one. That's an easy one. He said that there were Jews that lived in the times of Noah. Not Jews, people. And those people were corrupt people, like it says, Kima Da'aris. Baruch Abba David. Kima Da'aris, Hamas Upinayim. They were committing all sorts of crimes. And their crimes were so bad that God had to bring them and flood them out. Those neshamot of Dor HaMabul came back to Mitzrayim, that Rizal says. They needed more purging. They were bad nation. They were bad generation. So, but they got flooded out. Well, it wasn't enough. So they had to come back. And what happened to those souls of Dor HaMabul? They were the ones that got thrown into the water again. They needed another... And then the Arizal said, there was another generation after the flood called Dor HaPalaga. They were the ones that built the tower to fight God. And it says, what did they use? They used bricks and mortar. Those neshamot had to come back to Egypt, like we said in this week's Perasha, Homer u'bil Benin. So he asked the Arizal. Arizal said, you don't know who these people are. I know who they are. These people are the old souls that for whatever reason needed rectification, and they had to, and therefore God is very precise. The ones that needed to get the rectification in water, got it in water. And the ones that needed rectification in bricks and mortar, got it in bricks and mortar. Everybody got what they're supposed to get, and there's no mistakes. It's with extreme precision. There was a story that took place in the times of the Second Temple. In the Second Temple, the chief rabbi at the time was Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan believed that the right move is to make peace with the Romans. That's what he believed. And he orchestrated a meeting with Vespasian in order to make peace. And that's what the chief rabbi decided, that it's better to make peace with the Romans than to go to war against the Romans. However, there was a bunch of, the Gemara calls them Biryonim. I don't know how you would call Biryonim, I guess hooligans. And these, you know, Biryonim is like, you know, troublemakers. Jewish. The head of the Biryonim, this guy's name is Shimon. A Jewish guy. And they felt, no, we got to fight. You know, like, what do you call those guys? The JDL. You know, you're going to fight. You're going to break their heads. And the rabbis told them, you know, we shouldn't fight here. They said, no, you don't know what you're doing. So they burnt down all the silos. And therefore, they burnt down all the food supply to force a war, to force a confrontation. You guys were trying, the rabbis went crazy. These Biryonim were ruining the rabbis' plan. They understood. Listen, the Biryonim thought that if they go to war, the temple won't be destroyed. But the rabbis already saw in Ruach HaKodesh, the temple is a foregone conclusion. We lost the temple already. Now at least let's make peace to save as much as we can save. But the Biryonim didn't accept it. And there was a large number of Biryonim that were giving a lot of trouble to the Achamim. Fine. We read the story. Everybody knows the story of the Biryonim. We read it in the Gemara. Fast forward to the year 1648. I think it's the year Tach V'Tat. Tafhet and Tafhet. That's about, what, 400 years ago? There's a rogue dictator in Ukraine. Bogdan Khmelnytsky. Shamir Ushad. The guy killed 100,000 Jews. He split them in half. He decapitated them. The guy was like Hitler of his time. You're watching the destruction. I mean, the Zohar predicted it. It's going to be Gezerot in the years Tach V'Tat, Tafhet and Tafhet. Everybody knew what's coming. Open the history books, the Gezerot of Tach V'Tat. It's well documented. And everybody sits there and they're scratching their head. They're saying, what the heck is going on over here? How could God let this happen? Now, there was Kabbalists at the time. And the Kabbalists said that all those people that got murdered in Tach V'Tat were the Gilgul of the Biryonim. Those were the Biryonim of the time of the Second Temple. And they came back, and they got to go through whatever they had to go through. So there's, you know, nothing for nothing. You know, those that are in the know, they understand why things happen. So the way we explain it is like this. I hope I can communicate this correctly. So everybody has a name. Everybody has a shem. And everybody has a purpose why they came to this world, and everybody has to fulfill that purpose in order to make their ultimate tikkun. Everybody has to go through what they have to go through in order to reach their, you know, the perfection of whatever they have to reach. That's their nisayon, that's their test. And it's all in their name, by the way. You know, give a guy who knows, you can look at your name, oh, this is what you're destined towards, this is what your potential is, this is what you're, they can see in the name. I told you when I went to the milkman, and he said, what's your name? And I said, I don't want to give it to you. He said, what'd you come for? I said, I came for a pint of milk, I came for cereal cheese. And he said, what's your name? I said, Eliyahu ben Nahel. He writes it on the paper. He takes out his magnifying glass. He starts to look at it. He says, you have 6 children. Bingo, bullseye. He says, 3 boys, 3 girls. Boom, another bullseye. There's no odds in Vegas for that. They hit two facts like that. He turns to Jerry Natkin, who's sitting next to me. He says, you sell watches. That's a good one. Jerry says, did you tell him? I said, yeah, he wants a Rolex. I told him. How about you wear a Rolex? Wait. I told him. Wait, I'm nothing better than telling you sell watches. He pegged each guy. Boom. Down the line. Just look at the name. And their mother's name. So the guys are about to do it. You can look at the name and you can start seeing purpose, goals, stuff. The great Sadiqim were able to look at a name. I saw it once. I was with Rabbi Abu Hasera in Israel, and there was a child that was missing, and they didn't know if he was alive or not. He says, give me the name. And he looked at the name, and he says, he's alive. Where is he? That's the next question. He's alive. How do you know, Rabbi? The lights. I see the lights still coming out of the... You know, they're not dark. There's light. So the name of a person, to the people who know how to read a name, it's the DNA of the person. The spiritual DNA of the person. So therefore, let's change our terminologies for a second. Let's say that name's actually your purpose. And if you believe that everything and everybody has a purpose, everybody has a tikkun, so then the pasuk is to be read like this. When you see shamot ba'aris, when you see people go through catastrophes, and you wonder and you say, wow, shemama, how can this be? Know that everybody that goes through whatever they go through, they have Shemot. And their Shemot, if you knew their Shemot, you knew exactly why they're going through those Shemot. Because in the Shemot is the secret of the Shemot. So therefore, to understand Shemot, you have to understand Shemot. That's the real thing. But we don't understand Shemot. So therefore, we cannot understand Shemot. But the sword of Shemot is in the Shemot. So if you're the Arizal, and you see Egypt, and all those names that are in Egypt, say, those are old names from Dora Midbar, Dora Mabul, and Dora Palaga. And if you see Tahvetat, all those names on the list of the death list, say, those are old names. Those are names from the Bidyonim, from the Second Temple. Sometimes Shemot can only be explained through the prism of Shemot. And unfortunately, we don't know what our purpose is and what our tikkun is. But I'll make a point. You have free will. I don't want you to say, I got my name now. I'm stuck. I'm Eliyahu. So I'm stuck with Eliyahu. I can't be anything but Eliyahu. Well, that's true. H2O cannot be, carbon dioxide. It is what it is. However, you're given your potential. Now, based on the configuration of letters, I could use my free will and the configuration will be a positive one. Or I could use my free will, and with the letters and strengths and talents that were given to me, I could become, God forbid, a bum. You understand? Which means, I'll give you an example. This guy that was in charge of the Biryonim, in the time of the Second Temple, his name was Shimon. Well, obviously in that name, Shimon was configured that he has to be a military leader and a fighter. That's his nature. Somehow in that word, Shimon is that nature. He decided to use that military against the Hakamim. Now, he could have sided with Rabbi Yohanan and become his bodyguard. And he could have used Shimon. You understand what I'm saying? You can't change your name. That's who you are. The question is, how are you going to use those chemicals or elements that God gave you to the right and not use it for the wrong? You can't be somebody else. You're Eliyahu and you're Shlomo and you're Yitzhak. Really, that's who you are. But in that configuration of names, it depends on how you how you want to use it. Therefore, you know, Harambam talks about when a person wants to make teshuvah, he should make shinui Hashem. He should change his name. I don't know if that necessarily means you should change your name necessarily. Do we ever hear of that? That somebody wants to make teshuvah? We heard of a sick person.
Yeah.
No problem. They add a name, they change a name. But Rambam says, if you want to make teshuvah, change your name. As if to say, I'm a different person. What does he mean? Unless maybe the Rambam means what we're saying today. That if a person was behaving in a certain way, the Rambam's telling you, you can change your name. Which means the configuration of the name and what your purpose is going to be is dependent on you. And therefore a person shouldn't think, well, this is who I am. No, you chose that road. But God gave you tremendous potential in those letters. And if you take those strengths that you used for the bad and somehow channel them to the good, you can change your name. Everybody can change their name. Even if a person was in Asha for 100 years, he could change his name. He has free will to turn it around and make himself a new, and he's a new person. Same letters, the same Eliyahu. And the proof of the pudding is, I'll give you an example. In Parashat Vayigash, when the tribes go down to Egypt, the Pasuk says, the same exact name that it mentions in this week's Parashat. Why would it mention the names twice? In two parashiyot ago, you mentioned Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, the same exact names. We forgot them from 2 weeks ago. And the explanation is because their purpose changed in 2 weeks. 2 weeks ago, when we went down to Egypt, their name was representing exile. That was their tikkun at the time. If you Reuven, Shimon, Levi, at that time, if you looked at the DNA of those names, it meant they have to go. The Shamot of Egypt was in the Shemot. However, now when you come to Parashat Shemot, which already we're talking about, they were there, and now we start to talk about how they got redeemed, it's new Shemot, it's new names. It's new names. It's not the same Reuven that went down. Because there when Reuven went down, his purpose was to serve out his tikkun of Galut. Now it's Reuven of Sifra Geulah. It's a different name. So we're not repeating the same name twice. As a person goes through life, the name takes on different purposes, different tikkunim. I guess so, yeah. The point is, the reason why it's called Sefer Shemot is because that is the essence of the book. The essence of the book, here you're reading about tremendous episodes that happened to Klal Yisrael. They go down to Egypt and all the stuff that happens, and there's the plagues, and there's Matan Torah, and there's stuff happening. But the Torah, where's the root of all this? The people that experienced all this over here, whether it was the exile, whether it was the redemption, whether it's all the things in between, it's all in the Shemot. You have to go back to the origin, and God predetermined that these people have this purpose, and they're going to be where they're supposed to be, and they're going to have to go through what they're going to have to go through. And you just hope, and this is what they say, you hope that you leave the word with a Shem Tov. What is Shem Tov? That's a good name. What's a good name? What does a good name mean? His name is not Adolf. What does a good name mean? Good name means that you used the kohot that God gave you. God gave you 6 building blocks. I can build it to create an atom bomb. I can build it to create a nursing home. What'd you do with the building blocks? So the building blocks of your name, you could use it, God forbid, as a Shem Ra, as a destructive force, or you could use it as a Shem Tov. Now, I'll tell you something else. That's why the day of the Brit Milah is very significant. The day of the Brit Milah, that's when you name the child. I once asked a big Kabbalist the following question. Why don't we name the kid on the first Shabbat after he's born? Not Shabbat, a holy day, that's a special day. No, instead name him on the 8th day, which is Tuesday, which is New Year's. Nonsense. Shabbat, Kodesh. We do that for the girls. Right? The father goes up to the Torah, we had a baby girl. Babru, name the baby. Do it for the boys also. No, for the boys. 8th day. Why? So, I'll just tell you the short version of what he told me. He said, listen, the name, that is a serious thing. Name doesn't come from this world over here. This world, of course, as we always know, is the world of 7. It's the maximum that this world can go to. We get to the 7th day of the week, It ends, and we go back to one. It's limited to seven. Anything in this world is confined to the number seven. Anybody play music? Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti. Seven notes. That's it. After what happens, after you get the ti, do, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do.
Seven out.
Seven numbers on the dice. Everybody according to what they're connected to. 100%. 100%. Slot machine. 777. But the point is, when you get to the number eight, eight always represents something above this world. Eight is beyond. Eight is above. That's why, for example, the Zohar says that when Mashiach comes, don't ask me how this is possible, they're going to add an eighth note to the scale. Yeah, so all your piano lessons, you're going to have to learn it again because they're going to add a new note. It's going to be the eighth note. It's a different world. Anything that comes from the number eight is supernatural. Eight is supernatural stuff. Should I give you an example of it? The Torah. What do you got to go around the bush? The Torah itself. When was the Torah given? The Torah was given after 7 weeks that we came out of Egypt. It was given on day 50. Day 50 is beginning of the eighth week. Because Torah is out of this world. Anything that's going to be connected to eight is already out of this world. Torah is given on day 50. Because 49 is still in the confines of this world. Day 50 is the first day of the eighth week. Bingo, it's Torah. Different level. And there's many, many examples of it. You guys said Hanukkah. You're correct. It's an eight-day holiday. The miracle of Hanukkah. That's why the miracle happened with Shimon. The root word of Shimonah is Shimon. Anyway, this is a side point. But the point is, but you knew that already because you interrupted. But the point is that you see over here an amazing concept. On the day of the Brit Milah, we want to access the name from the higher. I don't want a name from this world. I don't want the Sue, Tom. I want to give it a real name. Give it a name from the upper world. So you wait till day eight. On day eight, when stuff happens on day eight, then already you're accessing the world of eight, the world of, you know, beyond. Right? Ruach HaKodesh. That's the world of Ruach HaKodesh. That's why it happens on that day. So therefore, now don't ask me about the girl. Don't ask me about the girl. There's answers for that as well. That although we name it on Shabbat, but it doesn't get activated, it could be to the eighth day as well. There's different ways. There's different interpretations how it works with it. But they don't get hurt, God forbid. Everybody wins in these stories over here. Now watch this. So back to the story. Shemot is the essence of the book. Shemot is the essence of everybody's life. Everybody has Sefer Shemot, you know. Everybody has their stuff that they have to go through in life. And a lot of times the stuff we go through in life is not pleasant stuff. It's Shemot. It's, you know, it's stuff that you say, wow, wow. And people that look at it say, whoo, that's an earthquake. But God doesn't make any mistakes. You know, it's in the Shemot, it's in the wiring. And if you knew the secret of the Shemot of people, I'll give you a simple example. This is an easy one. You remember Moshe? This week's parasha, that's what I told you. Moshe was put in a teva. And then he was floating in the water. And who saves Moshe from this teva? Batya, or Bitya, that's the real name. Now, Batya is the same letters as teva, which means in her name. Already you see one of her main accomplishments in her life is teva, is to retrieve that teva. That's a classic, but it's perfect right in the name itself. Sometimes it's obvious. That configuration, you don't need to be a Kabbalist. You see it right in front of her. It's Batya. Write one of the ten, your top ten accomplishments. The first thing she's going to say, I was the one that saved Moshe. That's number one. I was the one. Oh yeah, what was he in? He was in a teva. Oh, strange. Your name is Batya. Same letters. Oh, coincidence? Of course not. Now, if she wouldn't have done it, she would have ruined that configuration and she would have had a bad name. Batya has Shem Tov. She lived up to her name, to the right, you know, the right mixture of the elements of those letters. And you find it in many, many different ways.
A lot of people do that.
We never have to our grandparents. That's already calculated. That's taken into calculation. Well, we name after our grandparents, you don't, because this kid has to have the name Yosef, and yours doesn't. It's all so factored in already. The market factored that in already. It's all factored into the price of the stock already. It's already, you know, by the time it gets to us, it's all in the price. Now watch this, Sabotai. Oh, so back to the Nevi'im. You thought I forgot the Nevi'im over here. So back to the story of the Nevi'im. That's the introduction to what I want to say in the story of the Nevi'im. So you have Pilishtim over here. These Pilishtim are, you know, all they care is going after the Yisod of Klal Yisrael. Just like Amalek, homosexuality, breaking the Milah, you know. They know, they go after the Yisod. If you go after the Yisod, you break the whole nation up. So Amalek does it right when we come out of Egypt. Pilishtim does it, you know, every other Monday and Thursday after we come out of Egypt. These are the enemies that we're fighting against. Moshe Rabbeinu was in Midian, this week's Perasha. He gets to Midian and he ends up getting married in Midian. It's not ideal. Not ideal. Not that his wife is an idol. Of course she's an idol. She's not tzaddikah. But to be living in, you know, Midian is a foreign land, and to raise children in this foreign place, you know, it's not... The Jewish community, at least, was in Egypt. It was a community in Egypt. There was a community in Egypt. Moshe Rabbeinu has to live in Midian for many years and raise his children outside of the... and hope that they won't get influenced from the assimilation of the Goyim. Amazing thing. He names his first son Gershom. And he says, why do I name him Gershom? Because Ger Aiti Be'eris Nochriya. Gershom. That I am a stranger in a foreign land. And he wanted to remind his son that we are strangers in this land over here. It's not our land over here. We have Eretz Yisrael eventually. We have a community back in Egypt. We over here are strangers. And Moshe Rabbeinu, who's an expert in names, back to the names, you know, he wasn't naming after his grandfather. He wasn't naming after his father. His father was Amram. He understood that this child needs insulation. This child needs to be insulated. So therefore, I have to insulate this child from all the... So he could be Sham, he could be over there in Midian, but he knows he's a Ger. He knows he doesn't belong. He knows he's different. That word Gershom is a key name that Moshe Rabbeinu obviously didn't... He didn't pick it out of the hat. You know, oh, I have a free name over here. You know, he could have named him any of the seven names of his father-in-law. You throw out seven names. He didn't. This child needs a special koah. Even though he's there means in the bad place, in Midian, but he knows he's a Ger. I'm different. I'm a stranger. I don't belong to this nonsense. That's the power. That's the power. And now all of a sudden, hundreds of years later, the Pilishtim guys come along and they try to assimilate the Jewish people. And now you need to have a leader, a shofet, that's going to come along and it's going to separate the people and tell them we're not Pilishtim. Even though they don't want to kill us, they want to assimilate with us, we're separate. We're a separatist nation. We're not part of them. So look how God runs the world. Arizal says this. God sends the power of Gershom, the power to be there, but to be a stranger. And he sends him to become the shofet. What was the name of the shofet that saved the people?
Shamgar.
Says the Arizal, Shamgar was the Gilgul of Gershom. This is the son of Moshe. The son of Moshe is Shamgar, Ben Anat, because Moshe Rabbeinu is called Anat Mikol Adam. Moshe Rabbeinu was called Ish Ne'eman, and Moshe Rabbeinu was called Tamim. Shamgar ben Anat, and Anav ben Ne'eman ben Tamim. That's the Benu Arisas. Shamgar ben Anat. If they taught us Nabi like that in seventh grade, we would have been something. They couldn't. We were too young for us to comprehend this. Shamgar ben Anat is another way of saying Gershom ben Moshe. Look at that, a blessing that the Navi and our Parasha complement each other. But then they go one step further. This this Shamgar ben Anat, who was fighting against the Pilishtim, he knew that the Pilishtim and Amalek, you know, Pilishtim and Amalek are the same cloth. They chip off the same block. The Gemara says that Amalek had a great grandson against their will. He was Jewish. Probably what happened was a Amalek man went with a Jewish woman, probably against her will, I'm sure. And, you know, he doesn't care too much, but she got pregnant. And from that came a big rabbi, the Gemara says, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Shelat. He taught Torah. He was a big rabbi. It says, Mibene Banav Shel Haman, Limdu Torah Bnei Berak. You know, from the grandchildren of Haman, there was a big... And they tell us about this rabbi, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Shelat, who came from Amalek. What was his job? He was a school teacher. He used to take children when they were very young, you know, and he was the first, he was like the first great Rebbe for these kids. And he talks to the Gemara. And what was his statement? He said, when the kid's young, you got to open his mouth and you got to fill him up like you're stuffing a, you know, an ox with food over there. And when he's young, he can retain it. And when he gets old, he's not going to be able to stuff him up when he's young. And the Gemara tells us how I used to keep the kids in line, you know. When you have kids in the first grade, especially in the younger grades, you know, wild. Magen David, Rabbi Biton used to have a stick that kept us in line, that's for sure. Not anymore. He's not around anymore. But the point is, that was the beast that used to tape it. You know, after it used to break, when you thought it's over, that's it, the stick broke. He would only reinforce it. The stick would like get a Tehillat HaMetim. It would only get stronger than it was before. And that stick was like a miracle stick. You could never get rid of the stick. Anyway, the Mekubalim write that Shamgar ben Anat, Vayachet HaPelishtim 600 Ish, he would come along and he would push the Pelishtim away with 600 Ish, with 600 men. But eventually, he would use a milamad habakar. Milamad, the Kubalim say, is a milamed, a teacher. And bakar is the flock. Why did he use it? Because eventually, from this episode, he already was creating the neshama of that milamad ben bakar, who was Rabbi Shmuel Bar Shelat, who was the milamed that used to take the stick and hit the kids like the... And used to stuff them up like a sheep, like an ox, because he knew that just like Amalek tries to catch the Jewish people at their inception, if we're going to fight Amalek, we have to catch the Jews in first grade. We have to catch them. So he went after Pilishtim and Amalek at the same time. He went after Pilishtim with Shamgar ben Anat ben Gershom ben Moshe, and he used the Milamad ben Bakar, which he was already creating like a Futurama of that Sadiq that would come and push back Amalek at the Rishi. In first grade, with the Milamad Bakar, with the stick of rebuke, and stuffing the child. Finally, now I'm not obligated to connect the Navi to the Parasha. It worked out that way. With this, speak to the committee, maybe they'll give me a raise for doing it. But don't hold your breath. Anyway, it says over here, based on what we're saying, I'll let you go because I have a class to go to. It's a class that we asked, it's a question that we asked early this morning, and I'd like to give another answer to it now. In this week's parasha, Paro goes to the midwives. Vayomer Paro lam yaledot ha'evriyot, asher shem ha'ahad shifra, v'shem ha'sheni pu'ah. That's a pasuk. Vayomer. And he tells them, "Biyaledchem et ha'avriyot, when you give birth to these Jewish women, uritem ben ha'orva ala ovnaim, look at the birthing stool, im benhu v'hamitem oto mibati v'chaya." The question we asked this morning is, there's two pasukim here. The first pasuk doesn't tell us what he told them. The pasuk says, "Vayomer Paro." למיילדות העבריות אשר שם האחד שפרה ושם השני פועה. ויומר, what's the first ויומר? It says he told the Jewish midwives that the name was Shifra and Pua, period. And he told them, what's the first ויומר? Understand the question? What explanation we said from the Bnei Yisachar, based on what we're learning here today, all in the name. But also, I don't have a chance. These two midwives were who? Yochebet and Miriam. There's no way that Yochebet and Miriam are going to go now and commit infanticide. There's no way they're going to do this. There's no chance that they're going to be able to. That suddenly he knows who they are. So Paro's so smart. Paro says, yeah, there's no chance as long as they have their Hebrew names. But if I change their names and give them non-Jewish names, give them names of the Goyim, then we have a chance. So Paro is going to make a name change on them. Now, anytime you see the letters Pe and Resh, you know it's Egyptian. Those are the phonetics that the Egyptians used. Paro, for sure, you see Pe, Resh. Potiphar, same letters, the Pe and the Resh. You see a lot of the names that they... Safnat Pa'neyah, when they change Yosef's name, Safnat Pa'neyah, the Pe'na'ayim, certain letters they use. So he comes along, huh? Pitom and Ramses, Eresh, those are the letters. So he comes to the Mi'eladot and says, by the way, first of all, you have a new name now. Your name is not Yocheved anymore. Your name is Shifra. So it's got the Egyptian, the Peresh. Peresh, by the way, Shifra, the same letters as Paro, it's only missing one letter. It's only missing the ayin. And your name is Pu'a. Also, Pe'ayin, it's all the letters of Paro as well. Those are your new names. Now, hopefully, with those new goy names, so that's what it says. Vayomer Paro lam yaledot ha'evriyot. You know what he told them? Asher shem ha'echad Shifra v'shem ha'sheni Pu'a. That's your new names. Now that you're Shifra and Pu'a, Vayomer. Now do that, because you know if you can take away the Shemot Kedoshim, then already you're not connected to the Shem anymore. So what is it exactly? You want to change the essence. So you call the guy by his English name all the time. You know you're not connected to his essence. So what does the pasuk say? Vatirena hamyaledot et ha'elohim velo asu kaasher diber alehen melech mitzrayim vatehayena et ha'eladim. What do you mean? If they didn't listen to the king of Egypt, of course they gave the children life. Why did it say two things? They didn't change their names. They didn't listen to that. I'm not Shifra, I'm not Bu'am, Yocheved and Miriam. And as a result, so therefore you see a perfect example in the parasha itself. Paro knew this. The Rishayim noticed all the secrets of our Torah better than us. And the lesson to us, Rabotai, is not to live down to your name, to live up to your name. All the great names that our parents called us at the time of the eighth day, on the eighth day of Ruach HaKodesh, Lemala Min HaTeva, that those letters that God gave us were, you know, preordained to us, and we have to take that raw potential that lays dormant in the letters of the name, and then use it, and advance it, and expose it, and then will be fulfilled on us what it says in the Mishnah, Keter Shem Tov Oleh Al Gabehen, that the crown of a good name rises above all. Baruch Adonai Le'olam.